Hello and welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. I'm Mark.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ben.
And in this episode, coming to you from our creative and media agency in central London, what can brand owners learn from these new approaches to promoting women's sport? Marlborough sells life insurance, which I think is a good idea.
It's not.
And Paul, Paddy Power getting banned yet again by the ASA.
We like to look back on the campaigns we talked about, but this one is not so good.
And some new TV campaigns too, so let's do that.
Let's go.
There's been an awful lot in the news about women's sport. Two areas I profess to know very little about, one being women, being a gay man, and the other being sport, being a gay man. I'll just hand over to you two and tell us what's been going on in the kind of arena of women's sport then.
Well, the reason we wanted to talk about it is the women's England football team, the Lionesses, had their squad announced, and they did it in quite an innovative way. You had each of the players, then you had celebrities as well. You had James Corden, you had David Beckham, all releasing sort of little videos, social videos, to sort of announcing sort of who was in the squad. And it just sort of made me feel that's quite a fresh, innovative way, an interesting way for sort of for sort of how brands could potentially work with new sporting talent. It's way more straight to sort of to consumer, much more genuine. Much more sort of like, you know, less earnest.
You know, as a gay man, I do feel quite excluded from football for lots of reasons. And therefore, I instantly switch off when I see a lot of the word you used was earnest marketing. It's all hype about, you can succeed, you'll be amazing, yeah. You can do it.
Absolutely.
And you know, Emma Watson dancing in a forest, I thought was quite cute.
Women's football is playing a fundamental role in how football as a sport is changing globally in terms of how people engage with it.
So do you think the kind of toxic masculinity thing in football is shifting?
It's shifting. I mean, it's still...
And it's helping, yeah, for sure.
It's definitely helping. I think it's kind of... It's definitely moving, and we've seen it with some of the players as well.
So, as a brand owner, our message is, you know, take a good look at yourself if you're still using old-fashioned masculine...
Absolutely.
Stereotypes. I hope they've got their message anyway, but here's a big sporting movement that is really shifting the dial on that, you're saying.
Absolutely. I think it's just more fun. It's easier for fans to sort of support and to engage with, and... I think it's taking football in a really interesting and a really sort of like important direction.
We worked with SoccerAid, didn't we, before? And one of the things we were really encouraging them to do was to make the teams mixed. And what a surprise, this year, the SoccerAid team certainly has a female manageress.
There's two players.
Susanna Reed.
manageress and two players. And we're absolutely taking some credit for that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It might have been a while ago, but we were championing that. And just for some context, the reason it didn't happen before was because it was officially a sanctioned game, a FA or FIFA sanctioned game, even though it was a charity match and couldn't have mixed gender. So whatever has happened over the last year is a good thing, because now they've got both genders playing, which is great. So well done, SoccerAid.
And can I bring your family into this, Paul? Because your fiance, soon to be wife, is a bit of a netball whiz, isn't she?
She is,
and
exactly that.
There's another sporting thing that I saw happen, which is the fashion retailer Oasis is the official sponsor of the Vitality Roses. I had to look that up. I didn't know that's what they were called.
Very
good. England's netball team.
That is, Vitality sponsor. Yeah. So this is a slightly more traditional, I think, brand sport mashup. So Oasis, the female fashion brand, for them, it's the brand. It's a brand refresh, their spring summer launch of their clothes. They're using the three of the England Roses as ambassadors, and they're kind of the kind of press release is talking about celebrating not just their sporting successes but the successes outside of the sport, which is very, very kind of very important for the netball players, because they're not professionals yet, so they have other lives. They're their lawyers, their mums, their kind of mentors, their coaches, all of those things. So I think it's a really, really interesting way of doing it. It's the right sport to do that with, because they're just about to, they're sort of, I think, pre-professional, so they have other lives, and they want to kind of celebrate, I guess, not just that, the sporting side of it, but the other side of thing as well.
What did you think about the tie-up with Oasis, as in, is it her kind of brand?
No, not at all. No. So she was very, very immediately was like, I'm not a fan of Oasis, it's not for me, but any exposure to the sport is a good thing.
Yeah.
And one other thing she said, which is very important as well, is it's a good body type as well, having these stars, because they're strong, not skinny,
right.
Which in her opinion was a good thing to sort of kick against. And knowing a lot about the England Roses is a good thing. These are very impressive women, not just in their sporting achievements. There's trained lawyers. There's kind of all this sort of stuff.
So
it should be quite inspiring.
That apparently is the brand positioning thing. So I did a bit of research, and the target audience for the Oasis brand is the polymath female. Now, I had to look polymath up. I thought I knew what it meant, but it's basically someone who's got a broad range of talents. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Oasis say about their target audience.
So the polymath thing, was that before this tie-up?
I don't know whether they've post-rationalized it, but that's how they're explaining it.
That screams of post-rationalization, but I was nodding anyway, but there you go.
Here's to the girl who's always running late. To oranges at half-time. To wedgies. To the girl who forgets to take off her bib. To the coaches. To the umpires. To the fans.
Yeah. Paul thinks we're going to fall out now, Ben.
I'm going to sit back and enjoy it, actually.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Philip Morris selling life insurance. That's not actually the full story. It's a couple of newspapers have written about this, not surprisingly, because Philip Morris are always, and all the tobacco brands, are always under the spotlight. The actual marketing story is there's a new entrant in the life insurance market. It's called Revvity, I think. But if you look more closely at Revvity, and it's not properly launched yet either, you'll see that Revvity is actually owned by Philip Morris. And I've only seen negative press comments about it, saying, I can't believe that, you know, the brand that's killing us is now trying to sell us life insurance. It's a bit like KFC doing a campaign to save chickens kind of thing. I don't know. I've got a more balanced view of it, I think. But I'll let you lambast me first for even bringing it up.
I mean, we talked about their latest campaign, I think it was for vapes or for giving up. I don't know, actually, we even talked about a particular product.
We talked about when they went was it IQOS? Officially. No, they did that whole page ad to say we're going to stop selling cigarettes in the UK by whatever the date was, 2022 or something. Yeah. They've set a date when they will stop selling cigarettes in the UK.
But the problem I have with it is that I understand that, you know, we talked about whether a brand or a business like Philip Morris can ever really be good because of what it's done in the past. Is it possible for it to reinvent itself and to offset all the negativity that
all the damage it's
all
done
the damage
it's done
to
years or
yeah,
something,
the sort of, you know, the deaths that, you know, doesn't get any worse than that. So this again, it feels like more moral offsetting, but. I understand that their sort of aim is to sort of, they're still selling cigarettes, and they're huge in sort of like massive, like, new product launch was this thing called IQOS, which, having spoken to a couple of people the weekend who were using an IQOS sort of thing, it's still a cigarette. It just happens to be heated rather than to burnt, so it's less damaging, but it's still a cigarette.
I feel like a BBC journalist now who's trying to balance the argument. And I'm sure Philip Morris, or actually they wouldn't say, because their lawyers don't let them defend themselves.
No.
But if you dug around and tried to learn about it, others say that the heated tobacco, not the burned tobacco, is less harmful than the old-fashioned cigarette.
It may be.
I am not suggesting anybody should take up smoking at all. Before we start,
and it still smells of smoking.
I mean, I'm an ex-smoker myself. My husband hates it. He would not let you in the house with a packet of cigarettes. So that's where I stand on it. But I wanted to talk about the marketing side. But go on.
Well, no, I also am an ex-smoker, and actually emotionally, it obviously makes me very suspicious. But if I think about this objectively in terms of as a company of that size, it can't just sort of stall and stop. It has to try and reinvent itself. So objectively, if I try and remove the cynicism away from it, then obviously this kind of, what else is it going to do? It has to try and offset in some way some of the things that it's done.
May I give you some clues? Because it is there in the kind of PR for Revvity. But go on, I'll tell you where they say they're going with this.
Well, no, I'd like to hear first before I sort of cast my sort of...
So what's also got them a lot of stick is the fact that you get a discount if you quit.
Okay.
You get a discount if you quit and then you take up one of the other products. Mm. So if you do take up IQOS, I can't pronounce it, or something like that.
I have a question, Mr. Journalist. Did you find out how they're tracking that in terms of... these incentives. If I saw some was like, if you do this for 3 months or this for a year.
Yeah, I didn't get that deep into it because I don't think it's actually fully launched yet. But yeah, it does say if you take up one of the products, you'll get up to half, up to 50% off your life insurance premium, which is the typical starting price is £5 a month for a 20-year-old or something like that. So they've got a lot of hassle for that. It's kind of incentivizing you to take up another Philip Morris product. And I can see that that does sound very dubious. But they say in the future, they basically, to me, it sounds like Vitality, you know, the kind of Prudential spin-off that we were talking about earlier, that you'll be incentivized if you make changes to your diet, if you reduce your consumption of alcohol, if you make commitments to getting fit. And they say that they're going to release an app, the Revity Life app, which will have 120 activities and programs to help you lead a more sustainable, healthier life.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing. Does that change the frame for you?
Just to jump in though, so incentivizing it is nothing new. Like, it's been happening in the driving insurance space for quite some time now, with kind of Aviva and having telematics in your car to get better insurance. So I actually think incentivizing is a good thing. I think the fact that obviously it's smoking, tobacco and death, it makes it much more contentious. But the way we're biologically wired, incentivizing humans is a good thing. It just needs to be in the marketing and needs to be positioned correctly. And if you read what they're saying, they're relatively self-aware, which is that we know we're terrible, we have been terrible, but we're self-aware enough to know that that's us, but gives a chance to somewhat redemption, I suppose.
I mean, I actually met someone who works in the German office of Philip Morris, and she is the head of corporate communications, and she was like, she just, the way in which she positioned it was really interesting, which is no bigger challenge than cigarettes. That's from a professional point of view.
As in, absolutely. So no bigger, intellectually, no bigger strategically, challenge. How you can't get tougher than that.
If I can do this, I can do anything.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to be stopping the factories in 2021 making cigarettes. We're making these new machines, because the IQOS is basically a machine, isn't it? Or the vapes. Mm-hmm. What else are we going to do with our stockpile of cash and our brand equity and our cleverness that means we can be a relevant organization, consumer organization in the 21st century? That's the challenge.
Come to where the flavor is. Come to Marlboro Country.
Another brand we've talked about quite a bit over the past couple of episodes is Paddy Power. And I think we were just saying that, weirdly, we talked ourselves around to go, you know what, they're a good bunch, aren't they? They've been sponsoring some interesting stuff and, you know, their ads are really funny. And and then this most recent one that we actually did rave about has just been slammed by the ASA.
Slammed and banned.
Slammed and banned.
I'm not sure we called them a good bunch.
Oh, okay.
We definitely did not say that.
Turned against them.
We enjoy their work.
Yeah, we were objectively admiring their sort of creative output.
I'm Roger Giggs, and I want to talk to you about loyalty.
Quite surprisingly, only 5 complaints. That felt like I thought there'd be more. But
yeah, well, I think they can investigate on just 1 or 2. There's no rule on how many they have to have.
So the ban is around. They've taken it down because they think they're implying gambling is a way to achieve financial security and improve self-image, because he's in a pub, changes his beer to champagne, he's in a sports car. I mean, I was surprised it got that far, really. I mean, it got through Clearcast, I assume, with relative ease, although Clearcast have come out and said, was it along the lines of, because it's only focusing on the rewards program and no mention or specific like visualization of gambling, they were happy for it to move on. So yeah, I was surprised it got that far. I think Paddy Power, as we touched on a few weeks back, well, we had a good run there, right?
I'm sure they've had
loads of stuff banned before.
You've worked in the category, so they know the law inside out. So do you think that one of their strategies is, let's just see how far we can go?
I would have thought that someone at the size of Paddy Power would have some very, very smart lawyers that are well experienced. They would have people probably with an inside track towards their Clearcast and ASAs, and just to work out where their boundaries are, so they can be as creative as possible with knowing kind of where they're gonna potentially fall over. And yeah, they would definitely plan for this is gonna go out for a few weeks, then get pulled down, because they'll get the PR off the back of it.
But that terrifies me, the whole concept of investing, you know, 6-7 figures in a in a vehicle, as in the cost of the production, the cost of the media, to kind of go, oh, this one lasted 2 weeks. Well done, everybody.
Banning is an amplification. Like, right. You know, look what happened with Rang Tang for Greenpeace.
Well, I was thinking back to Radio 1 days when records got banned on Radio 1, which then they immediately Donna Summer, number one, because she was having an orgasm on a record.
There's some behavioural economics in there, isn't there?
It is. And I think.
And I am sure it just reinforces the appeal to that sector of their audience who are rebellious. They're rebelling for whatever reason. We talked about the psychology of gambling before, didn't we?
Yeah.
And so therefore seeing it get a bit of a, well, that good old Paddy Power trying to be a bit naughty, that's me. I kind of really get that.
Yeah.
I'll continue playing with Paddy Power. But the real acid test for me was this thing about the loyalty programme, because I was thinking, oh, maybe that is a smart idea, because, you know, you've taught me, Paul, that this market is all about promotions. It's all about the free bet. Who's offering you the biggest free bet? You go with them, and then you move with somebody else. There's probably very little loyalty in the category. And taking them for their word, this is not an ad about Paddy Power. It's not an ad about gambling. It's an ad about our loyalty programme. I thought, oh, OK, I'll sign up for the loyalty programme. So I went through the process that you would have to go through, and I didn't end up signing up for the loyalty programme. There appears to be no such thing, or I couldn't see it. Paddy Power, if you're listening, show me where it is. In the end up, I just ended up registering for Paddy Power. I got an email saying, thanks for registering with Paddy Power, not thanks for being part of the loyalty programme.
Unfortunately, Mark, a lot of these rewards will be driven by behaviour. So until you start depositing and spending some money, you won't see those rewards. But that's the reality.
It makes my blood boil. I mean, this is the stuff that I absolutely... This is why as an agency, we don't work on gambling brands, because there's nothing positive about what they do.
Thanks, buddy.
Paddy Power's Rewards Club. Loyalty's dead. Live for rewards.
Some new work, and the first one we're looking at this episode is a new global campaign for Just Eat. Paul, you were looking at this one. It's another musical.
It is a bit, isn't it? I mean, I'll start by saying, not sure if it's global, but anyway, we'll come back to that. So yeah, this is a new advert for Just Eat. McCann have recently picked it up from our old friends at Karmarama. And I guess to quote the press release, they are pivoting away from convenience, and this is all about the joy of takeaway. But it's a really fun ad. It's creatively, it is tapping into our love of TV, basically, our love of different series. And if you watch the ad, you'll see different references, a lot of kind of popular culture references, from Game of Thrones to reality TV, you name it. So kind of quite on the nose for that respect. And you've got a couple who are asking, do we fancy Just Eat? And you've effectively got the TV singing back at them through different TV shows. Entertaining, high production value. This global bit, I think it feels very kind of UK focused, if I'm honest. They're talking about it going out into other markets. Maybe there's other versions, I'm not sure how that would work. Good fun. I think it run its course with the kind of convenience, and the Karmarama work was great at the start, and I think it's sort of lost its way a little bit, so needed a refresh. And this, as I said, it's all about the joy of the takeaway. A funny personal story, if I may. So two Love Island stars who are still a couple have just moved in on my road. And they are.
Look at you!
I know. Don't get
celebrity granny.
Don't get carried away. There's definitely two sides to my road. Anyway, so they are actually Just Eat ambassadors.
Are they
and
really?
I was walking home last night, and there was a scooter outside their house, and they were getting delivered a takeaway, which I assume is from Just Eat.
They get freebies.
I think so. I mean,
unlimited Just Eat.
I mean, they've got a lot of hashtag ad for Just Eat takeaway, so I assume it was a freebie. But
wow,
what the chances, hey? That we it's only right that we spoke about the new ad.
Can you imagine it would be like the equivalent of a Nando's black card, a Just Eat black card, unlimited Just takeaway?
Yeah.
Your idea of heaven,
Ben. I would love it. I mean, it's interesting that I'm more and more I think about it. It's a sort of, I think it's grounding it in a much more realistic place where people really go, oh, yeah, okay, fine. I like TV. I like fast food. I like takeaway food. Brilliant. Like, it's that simple.
I can't imagine being in the pitch and kind of coming up with the cultural insight. Consumers like TV. Oh my goodness. But it's, wow. But so we're going to bring the TV to the front of the ad.
There's literally about a dozen types of TV show in there, isn't it? Just to make sure
Game of Thrones,
quiz shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've probably done some global ones. So that's probably what we haven't seen. We may have seen a British variation.
I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah. That's what I'd like to see. Somebody say just
I'm actually not that hungry.
The next one I wanted to talk about was Tesco. And I'm not a particularly big Tesco fan, but I do love a kind of fun musical kind of, and it was just exciting and had so many memes from the 1980s, you know, and anybody who puts Earth, Wind and Fire onto an ad soundtrack gets my vote. And Annika Rice and Mr. Motivator, all from my childhood, and the concept, Prices That Take You Back. I mean, it's got Planner written all over it, hasn't it? And Paul, you smiled.
It was. I mean, within a few seconds, seeing Annika. I mean, haven't seen her for a while. It was great to see Annika again.
She needs the work.
Yeah, Mr. Motivator Morph. I mean, within like 5 seconds, I was like, okay, shit, I'm definitely the target for this. But then actually, it does go further back, doesn't it? With the kind of mods and right at the end of the car park, you can see almost like wartime car. But it felt like a Planner slide a bit, didn't it? Which is take prices back and then creatively, but not the first time they've done it, Ben.
No, I think it's the second sort of second release of these kind of ads, and I think they did one before Christmas. But it's super charming, and like it kind of applies to loads of different people. You've got loads of different references, everything from sort of like Quadrophenia through to sort of like Mr. Motivator and what have you. So
I think the strategy, you actually maybe inadvertently touched on it, Ben. I think the brief is, I want Britain to fall back in love with Tesco, because it has had a bit of a checkered history. It's not the cheapest place, you know. The UK, not in volume but certainly in sentiment, has massively shifted to Aldi. If you know, amongst my working class peer group, when I go back home up north, the Aldi car park is packed, absolutely packed. Yeah. And it's good quality and it's cheaper than Tesco. And I think Tesco are having to fight back. They're having to win our hearts back.
And nostalgia is maybe the best way to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
There's a big milestone coming up, right? With the 100
years in May. Yeah.
So we'll, I don't know, I expect we'll see more, right?
So there's a whole multi-channel, multifaceted strategy that I've seen that they're focusing on. The other one is they're bringing Jack's brands. We talked about Jack's really early on in our podcast history. Yep. One of the first things we talked about. Still haven't managed to go. Maybe we'll have a day trip out.
A day trip to Jack's,
wherever it was, Swindon or somewhere.
We've made it.
The first Jack's branch.
But aiming high.
They're going to put Jack's products into mainstream Tesco stores as an experiment. As another way to show value, which is quite interesting.
But doesn't
that
complicate things? Doesn't that make things a little bit sort of messy?
One of the PR stories was that some of the Jack's products were more expensive than their Tesco's essential own label share, which was somewhat controversial. So yeah, that'd be quite confusing, but interesting at least to see what
more
happens
variety
when that goes in. Yeah,
but I think that so the proof, and really interesting from our perspective, is can nostalgia beat price and convenience of some like Aldi or Lidl? Can nostalgia do that? Because what it's effectively saying to people is, look how long we've been around. Do you remember
when it first started? The most bonkers campaign I've seen quite a while is this campaign, because the genius stroke was, we're going to do an ad about Bridges, so we need a man called Bridges in the ad. Genius. Ben, why didn't you do that?
Oh, I mean, I love how on the nose it is. I think it's quite funny. I think obviously using sort of someone of that quality and that kind of celebrity is really interesting. But the reason why people in our industry are talking about it a lot is because, not necessarily because it's...
because we understand it. Because it's an ad about Bridges, and it's got Jeff Bridges in it.
I get that. You needed sort of like Columbo to work that one out. But it is, it's because not that long ago, I think it was during the Super Bowl, Stella in America used Jeff Bridges, and I think as the dude from The Big Lebowski, alongside sort of Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City in an ad.
Oh yeah, we covered that because we did a Super Bowl special when you were on your honeymoon.
Yes, that's it.
We did, yeah.
And so the criticism is like, why is Jeff Bridges being used again for a different beer brand? I mean, personally, like, for European audiences, you wouldn't have seen that Super Bowl ad. It doesn't really matter. And actually, for people watching it here, it's funny. It's great. it makes sense. Amsterdam's famous for bridges. I'm not even having to explain it because it's so obvious. But the thing that really got my goat was that the brand manager or someone from the client said when was quizzed about why they've used Jeff Bridges when Stella was using him not that long ago, he said that it was because there was a distinctly different audience for Amstel than there is for Stella. And then obviously everyone here was like, well, that's absolutely rubbish because there isn't. And it's that it started that conversation around sort of those kind of mass market sort of lagers that we talked about with the Carlsberg campaign a couple of weeks or last week, and how sort of over the years those businesses, those brands, I mean Heineken own Amstel, they generally believe in the pen portraits that they sort of create for each of the different lagers that they have. And actually, to be honest, it doesn't really it doesn't work like that.
We haven't talked about the strategy because I was joking about the creative approach. The strategy is togetherness. And so then they moved on, you know, we have a Dutch heritage, togetherness, the symbol of togetherness is a bridge, because a bridge literally brings together two parts of a community, because, you know, rivers do tend to separate communities. That we live in a city that has forever been quite north and south, and the bridge is the bit that brings it together. And what Amstel claim they're going to be doing, or the brewer via the Amstel brand is going to be doing, is doing loads and loads of togetherness. Maybe even campaigns to save the local pub and all that kind of stuff. So I like that too. If they follow it up, if they bring it to life, I think that is quite an interesting positioning.
But what's the difference? Okay, so I totally understand where that comes from. But having worked on Heineken at a previous agency, where their brand strategy is all around sort of connecting people who are different.
Actually,
togetherness. People do, like,
it's just a different spin on the same thing.
I mean, what do people do when they get together?
They drink. They drink Amstel.
I mean, it is nothing new, but I do agree with you. It is the right platform, and it's got potential.
It's more fun.
It's nothing new. Yeah.
And my favourite bit of the ad, I don't know whether you noticed this, but if you haven't, watch it again. The final frame just looks like Jeff Bridges in the bath.
Amsterdam, the dam. A city where togetherness is king. And why do you think that is? Bridges, man. And I should know because, well, I'm Jeff Bridges.
So as Ben and Paul come to grips with their fan mail, they have been reading their reviews on iTunes. Thank you for those. It's another exciting episode of Wax Lyrical Put to Bed. It's goodbye from me.
See you soon, guys. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.